The smell of Jorik's blood still clung to my hands 3 hours after I'd put the blade between his ribs. I'd scrubbed them raw in the rust-colored water that dripped from the corroded pipes above my hideout, but the metallic stench lingered like a guilty conscience I'd never possessed. The bastard had it coming anyway, trusted me enough to turn his back while counting out his daily take from the Obscura sales. 23 years I'd known him, ever since we were both scrawny underhive rats stealing corpse meal from the dead, and he still hadn't learned that trust was just another word for stupidity down here in the bowels of Vervenhive. I flexed my fingers around the vial of liquid Obscura I'd lifted from his stash, watching the purple substance swirl in the dim light of my glow strip. Premium grade stuff, the kind that usually found its way to the mid-hive nobility who paid through the nose for their chemical escapes. Jorik had been sitting on a fortune and the stupid bastard didn't even know it. 3 crates of the refined drug, plus a smaller case of sacred unguents that some upper hive priest had probably commissioned for his private ceremonies. The unguents alone would fetch enough throne gelt to buy my way into a better territory, maybe even secure passage to the mid-hive levels, where the air didn't burn your lungs with every breath. The hideout I'd claimed after gutting the previous occupant last winter stretched barely 6 meters in any direction, carved into the foundation wall between 2 massive support pillars that groaned constantly under the weight of the hive city above. Condensation beaded on the metal walls, mixing industrial runoff with whatever toxic soup leaked down from the levels overhead. I'd grown up breathing this poison, same as every other underhive scum, but lately the chemical fog seemed thicker, more oppressive. The air recyclers hadn't worked properly in decades, leaving us with whatever atmosphere managed to filter down through kilometers of decay and neglect. Vervenhive's underhive sprawled through a maze of forgotten maintenance tunnels, abandoned hab blocks, and industrial warrens that the upper levels had written off centuries ago. The original architects had built deep, driving the foundations into the planet's crust to support the massive weight of the growing city above. But time and neglect had taken their toll. Structural supports corroded through, leaving entire sections propped up by salvaged girders and prayers to the Emperor. Cave-ins happened weekly, sometimes taking whole gang territories with them when the ceiling finally gave way. I'd learned to read the signs early, the subtle shift in the metals groaning, the way dust patterns changed when stress fractures started spreading through the rockcrete overhead. Survival in the underhive meant understanding that everything around you wanted to kill you, from the rival gangers to the very walls themselves. The smart ones found defensible positions away from the worst structural damage. The stupid ones got buried under tons of debris when their luck ran out. Moving through my territory required navigating a network of service corridors and ventilation shafts that connected the various gang holdings like arteries through a diseased body. The main passages were controlled by whoever had the firepower to hold them, but the smaller routes belonged to people like me, killers and thieves who knew every bolt hole and escape route carved into the hive's guts. I'd spent years mapping these tunnels, marking the safe paths and the dead ends where unwary intruders could be trapped and butchered at leisure. The sump skulls had controlled this section before I'd systematically murdered my way through their hierarchy. It took me 8 months to work my way up from the bottom, playing the loyal soldier while I identified their weaknesses and turned their paranoia against them. Gang leaders in the underhive rarely died of old age, but they usually saw their ends coming. I'd made sure the skulls never got that luxury. A blade in the dark here, a convenient accident there, poison in the communal still that left 3 of their heavies convulsing in their own vomit. By the time their boss realized what was happening, I was the only lieutenant left standing. Now I ran 12 scavengers and chem pushers through these same tunnels, keeping them in line through the same mixture of fear and calculated violence that had served me well for years. They brought me information along with their tribute, whispers about rival gang movements and opportunities for profit that might present themselves. Most of it was worthless garbage, but occasionally someone would mention a vulnerable target or a shipment moving through contested territory. That's how I'd learned about Jorik's latest score. One of my runners had spotted him making unusual trips to the old industrial sector, carrying cases that looked too valuable for his usual trade in low-grade stims and hallucinogens. A little surveillance confirmed what I'd suspected. The bastard had stumbled onto something big and was keeping it to himself instead of offering his old friend a partnership. The betrayal stung less than the missed opportunity for profit. Killing him had been almost disappointingly easy. Jorik still remembered when we'd watched each other's backs against the Rust Prophets and the Bone Merchants, still thought those shared experiences meant something. I'd let him believe in our friendship right up until the moment I opened his throat. The look of surprise in his eyes as he bled out had been worth almost as much as the Obscura itself. The sacred unguents presented a more complex problem than the drugs. Obscura had a ready market throughout the Underhive, plenty of desperate souls willing to trade everything they owned for a few hours of chemical oblivion. But the religious oils and blessed incense in the smaller case were specialty items, the kind of thing that upper hive priests used in their private devotions. Moving them would require contacts I didn't possess, or the kind of risks that usually ended with an arbitrator's shock maul cracking your skull. I'd been turning the problem over in my mind when I first noticed the sounds in the ventilation system. Vervenhive's air recycling network was ancient and poorly maintained, full of rattles and groans that provided constant background noise to Underhive life. But these sounds were different, whispers that seemed to carry words just beyond the edge of comprehension, voices that stopped whenever I tried to focus on them directly. The Obscura withdrawal was hitting harder than usual, leaving me jumpy and paranoid in ways that could get a man killed down here. I've been using more of the drug lately, sampling my own merchandise instead of maintaining the professional distance that kept dealers alive. The purple liquid helped dull the constant ache in my joints and the burning sensation that had started spreading through my chest, but it came with a price in clarity and reaction time. Shadows moved wrong in my peripheral vision, shifting independently of their light sources in ways that made my skin crawl. I'd catch glimpses of movement in the corner of my eye, but when I turned to look directly, nothing would be there except the familiar decay of my surroundings. The logical part of my mind insisted it was just the drugs playing tricks, chemical phantoms dancing through my damaged nervous system. But logic was a luxury that Underhive survivors learned to distrust. The whispers grew more persistent as the hours passed, seeming to emanate from the corroded grills that covered the ventilation shafts throughout my hideout. Sometimes they sounded almost like prayers, the kind of devotional chanting that echoed through the upper hive's temples during religious observances. Other times they carried a different quality, urgent and conspiratorial, as if invisible figures were discussing plans just beyond my ability to understand. I'd been hearing voices for weeks now, ever since I'd started sampling the higher-grade Obscura that some of my competitors were pushing through the mid-hive markets. The stuff was purer than anything produced in the Underhive's crude chem labs, refined through processes that required equipment and expertise far beyond what most gangers could access. Using it felt like drowning in purple velvet, but the aftereffects were becoming increasingly difficult to manage. My hands shook as I prepared another dose, the glass vial clicking against my teeth as I drained its contents. The familiar warmth spread through my veins, dulling the sharp edges of paranoia that had been building throughout the day. The whispers faded to a barely audible murmur, and the shadows returned to their proper places among the debris scattered across my floor. But even through the chemical haze, I couldn't shake the feeling that something fundamental had changed in the Underhive's ecosystem. The other gangers I encountered seemed more on edge than usual, quicker to violence and slower to trust. Territorial disputes that might have been settled through negotiation or ritual combat were escalating into full-scale wars that left entire sections of tunnel uninhabitable. The usual patterns of Underhive politics were breaking down, replaced by something uglier and more desperate. Three separate runners had failed to report back from routine collection runs in the past week, vanishing without trace in territories that should have been safe for anyone flying my colors. Their absence left gaps in my information network that made me feel blind and vulnerable, cut off from the constant flow of gossip and intelligence that kept successful gang leaders alive. The Obscura was wearing off faster than it should have, leaving me crashing back into awareness with my nerves raw and hypersensitive. Every sound seemed amplified, every shadow pregnant with potential threat. I needed to move the stolen merchandise soon, before the withdrawal symptoms made me too unstable to negotiate properly. But finding buyers for premium-grade drugs required venturing into territories controlled by gangs with better connections to the mid-hive markets. That meant dealing with the Crimson Jackals, who controlled the primary smuggling routes between the Underhive and the commercial districts above. Their leader was a vicious bastard named Corvin, who built his reputation by flaying rivals alive and displaying their skins as territorial markers. But he had the contacts and the protection necessary to move high-value merchandise without attracting unwanted attention from the arbitrators. The thought of approaching Corvin made my stomach clench with familiar anxiety. He knew my reputation well enough to demand a significant cut of any deal, and he was smart enough to recognize the value of what I was offering. Worse, he might decide that simply killing me and taking everything would be more profitable than negotiating a partnership. Trust was always temporary in the Underhive, and I'd burned enough bridges over the years to know that my list of enemies was growing longer than my list of allies. But the alternative was trying to move the merchandise through my own limited network, piece by piece, until someone figured out what I was sitting on and decided to take it by force. The sacred unguents were particularly problematic. Their very presence in the Underhive suggested connections to the upper hive's religious hierarchy that could bring down heat I wasn't equipped to handle. The whispers started again as I considered my options, seeming to emanate from every ventilation grill simultaneously. This time they carried a different quality, less like distant conversation and more like something trying to communicate directly with me. The sounds made the hair on my arm stand up, triggering instincts that had kept me alive through decades of Underhive warfare. I forced myself to focus on practical concerns, pushing the auditory hallucinations into the background through sheer force of will. The Obscura stash represented the biggest score of my career, enough wealth to buy passage off-world, or at least secure a position in the mid-hive where the air wouldn't slowly poison my lungs. But first I had to survive long enough to spend it, and that meant making decisions based on reality rather than drug-induced paranoia. The old woman had been counting her pathetic collection of thrown gelt when I kicked in the rusted door to her hab unit. 3 coins, maybe 4, scattered across the corroded metal table as she spun around with eyes wide in terror. The kind of look I'd seen 1,000 times before, that moment when prey realizes the predator has found them. She opened her mouth to scream, but I was already moving, crossing the cramped space in 2 strides with my knife leading the way. Her blood pooled differently than Jorik's had, thinner somehow like it had been watered down by decades of breathing the Underhive's toxic atmosphere. The blade slid between her ribs with barely any resistance, finding her heart through muscle and bone that felt brittle as old parchment. She died without making a sound, collapsing onto the pile of refuse she'd been using as a bed. The hab unit was even more pathetic than most Underhive dwellings I'd ransacked over the years. A single room carved into the foundation wall, maybe 3 meters square, with walls that wept constant moisture from the chemical runoff seeping through the rockcrete above. The old woman had tried to make it livable with scraps of cloth hung as curtains and a few personal belongings arranged on makeshift shelves. All of it worthless, the kind of sentimental garbage that Underhive scum collected when they forgot that sentiment was just another word for weakness. I was rifling through her meager possessions when my fingers found the hidden panel behind her sleeping area. The metal gave way under pressure, revealing a narrow opening that led deeper into the wall. The space beyond was larger than it should have been, carved out of the foundation itself and extending back into darkness that my glow strip couldn't penetrate. The air that drifted out carried a different quality than the usual Underhive atmosphere, cleaner somehow, with an underlying scent of incense and sanctified oils. The tunnel stretched back for nearly 20 meters before opening into a chamber that made my skin crawl the moment I stepped inside. Candles lined the walls in neat rows, their flames casting dancing shadows across carved reliefs that depicted the god emperor in various poses of divine judgment. The ceiling had been painted with crude but recognizable imperial iconography, aquilas and skulls interwoven with scriptural passages that I couldn't read but recognized as high Gothic. At the far end of the chamber, a makeshift altar held more candles, purity seals, and what looked like genuine blessed artifacts that must have cost the old woman everything she'd ever owned. The realization hit me like a punch to the gut. The pathetic creature I'd just murdered hadn't been another Underhive scum scraping by on stolen scraps and chemical dependency. She'd been a lay preacher, one of those fanatic devotees who maintained unauthorized shrines in the forgotten corners of the Hive City. The kind of person who gave up everything to serve the Emperor's will, even in places where his light barely reached. My hands moved without conscious thought, grabbing the most valuable-looking items from the altar and stuffing them into the sack I'd brought for her throne gelt. The candles were made from real wax, not the recycled fat and chemical compounds that most underhive inhabitants burned for light. The purity seals bore genuine ecclesiastical stamps, the kind that marked them as blessed by actual priests, rather than the counterfeit versions that black market dealers sold to desperate believers. Even the incense burner was crafted from real metal, instead of the corroded scraps that usually passed for religious artifacts down here. The whispers started before I'd even finished looting the shrine. Soft at first, barely audible over the sound of my own breathing, but growing steadily louder as I worked my way through the old woman's collection. They seemed to come from everywhere at once, echoing off the carved walls in ways that made the chamber feel larger and more oppressive than its actual dimensions. The words were in low, gothic, accusatory phrases that I recognized from the few religious services I'd been forced to attend as a child. I told myself it was just the acoustics playing tricks, sound bouncing off the stone in unexpected ways that created the illusion of voices. But the rational explanation felt hollow even as I repeated it in my mind. The whispers carried too much weight, too much presence to be dismissed as mere echoes. They spoke of judgment and damnation, of sins that could never be forgiven and debts that would be paid in blood and suffering. The shadows in the chamber began moving independently of the candle flames, stretching and contracting in patterns that hurt to look at directly. I caught glimpses of a massive figure lurking at the edge of my vision, something that wore the flowing robes of an ecclesiarchy confessor but stood far too tall to be human. When I turned to face it directly, nothing was there except the familiar stone walls and their carved decorations. But the presence remained, watching me with an intensity that made my hands shake as I continued stuffing artifacts into my sack. Getting back to my hideout took longer than it should have, partly because I kept stopping to look over my shoulder, and partly because the tunnel system seemed different somehow. Passages that I'd navigated hundreds of times before felt unfamiliar, their proportions subtly wrong in ways that made me question my own memory. The whispers followed me through the ventilation system, growing fainter with distance but never disappearing entirely. By the time I reached my own territory, my clothes were soaked with sweat despite the perpetual chill of the underhive atmosphere. The religious artifacts presented an even more complex problem than Jorik's obscura stash. Sacred items carried their own risks in the underhive's black markets, attracting attention from fanatics and heretics alike. But they also commanded premium prices from the right buyers, collectors who paid well for genuine ecclesiastical merchandise that couldn't be obtained through legitimate channels. The trick was finding those buyers without exposing myself to the kind of scrutiny that could prove fatal. Matthias Grend ran a smuggling operation out of the old water treatment facility, moving everything from stolen weapons to contraband literature through his network of contacts in the mid-hive commercial districts. He was a careful man who'd survived 20 years in the business by avoiding unnecessary risks and maintaining strict operational security. But he also had a reputation for paying fair prices for quality merchandise, and his connections extended high enough into the hive hierarchy to handle even the most sensitive items. The water treatment facility had been abandoned for decades, its massive filtration systems left to rust and decay when the upper levels installed newer equipment. Grend had claimed the complex through the simple expedient of murdering the previous occupants and fortifying the entrances against casual intruders. His people controlled access through a series of checkpoints that filtered out anyone who didn't belong, while the facility's labyrinthine layout provided multiple escape routes if the arbitrators ever decided to raid the operation. I found Grend in his usual spot, a converted office overlooking the main treatment floor where his subordinates sorted and cataloged the constant stream of stolen goods that flowed through his operation. He was a thin man with prematurely gray hair and the kind of nervous energy that came from years of looking over his shoulder for enemies and competitors. The scars on his hands and face told the story of someone who'd survived more assassination attempts than most underhive criminals could expect. When I showed him the religious artifacts, his reaction was immediate and unmistakable. The careful mask of professional detachment slipped for just a moment, revealing the hunger that drove all successful black market dealers. He examined each piece with the practiced eye of someone who knew quality when he saw it, testing the weight of the metal and checking the authenticity of the ecclesiastical seals. The purity seals particularly caught his attention, their genuine blessed status making them worth several times their weight in thrown gelt to the right collectors. Gren's questions came fast and pointed, probing for details about where I'd acquired the merchandise and whether anyone else knew about the transaction. I fed him a carefully constructed story about finding the items in an abandoned shrine, leaving out any mention of the old woman or the circumstances of her death. The lie came easily, as most lies did, but something about the way he listened made me elaborate beyond what was necessary. I found myself adding details that hadn't been part of my original story, embellishments about rival gangers and territorial disputes that had nothing to do with the actual theft. The compulsion to keep talking grew stronger as the conversation continued, as if something was forcing the words out of my mouth faster than I could control them. I heard myself describing other crimes, other murders, incidents from years past that had no bearing on the current transaction. Gren's expression shifted from professional interest to wary confusion as I rambled through a catalog of violence and betrayal that painted me as either a dangerous psychopath or a pathological liar. When I finally managed to stop talking, the silence stretched uncomfortably between us. Gren named a price that was fair but not generous, clearly factoring in his assessment of my reliability as a business partner. The transaction concluded without the usual pleasantries that marked successful deals in his operation, and I left with the distinct impression that he would be more cautious about future dealings with me. The whispers followed me back through the tunnel system, growing louder and more insistent with each step. They seemed to emanate from the ventilation grills that lined the passages, carrying words of judgment and condemnation that made my skin crawl. The massive shadowy figure appeared more frequently now, glimpsed in peripheral vision as I navigated the familiar routes to my territory. It wore the unmistakable robes of an ecclesiarchy confessor, the kind of priest who specialized in extracting confessions from heretics and sinners through methods that the Imperium preferred not to discuss in polite company. Back in my hideout, the thrown gelt from Gren's payment felt heavier than it should have, as if the coins themselves carried the weight of my crimes. I tried to focus on practical concerns, planning how to invest the money in expanding my territory or acquiring better weapons for my crew. But the whispers made concentration impossible, filling my head with accusations and threats that seemed to come from my own guilty conscience given voice. Sleep brought no relief from the psychological assault. The shadowy confessor appeared in my dreams, towering over me with eyes that burned like stars and a face hidden by the deep hood of his robes. He spoke in the old woman's voice, reciting the prayers she must have whispered in her hidden shrine while I was planning her murder. The words were in high Gothic, but somehow I understood every syllable, every accusation of blasphemy and desecration that fell from his lips like drops of acid. I woke to find myself speaking aloud, confessing crimes to the empty air of my hideout in a voice that sounded strange and hollow. The words poured out without conscious volition, describing murders and thefts in exhaustive detail while simultaneously denying everything. The contradiction didn't seem to matter. I could confess and lie in the same breath, admitting guilt while protesting innocence with equal conviction. The pattern continued throughout the following days as I went about my usual business of collecting tribute from my subordinates and planning new criminal enterprises. Every conversation became an opportunity for unwanted confession, my mouth moving independently of my conscious will to describe acts of violence and betrayal that should have remained secret. The other gangers began avoiding me, recognizing the signs of someone whose mind was coming apart under the pressure of underhive life. But even as I confessed to anyone who would listen, I found myself denying everything with equal fervor. The lies came as easily as the truths, weaving together into a tapestry of contradiction that left my listeners confused and disturbed. I could describe murdering the old woman in vivid detail while simultaneously insisting that I'd never seen her before, that the whole story was just another fabrication designed to enhance my reputation for ruthless efficiency. The shadowy confessor grew more substantial with each passing day, his presence becoming a constant weight at the edge of my awareness. He no longer appeared only in peripheral vision or dreams, but stood directly before me in moments when the whispers reached their crescendo. His robes rustled with movement that generated no sound, and his eyes held the cold fire of absolute judgment. When he spoke, his voice carried the authority of the God Emperor himself, pronouncing sentences that would be carried out in ways too terrible to contemplate. The stolen religious artifacts had opened something that I couldn't close, creating a connection between my guilty conscience and forces that existed beyond the material world. The old woman's shrine had been more than just a place of worship. It had been a sanctuary that kept darker influences at bay through constant prayer and devotion. By desecrating it and murdering its keeper, I'd torn a hole in the spiritual fabric that protected the Underhive from the attention of entities that fed on guilt and corruption. The whispers spoke of debts that could never be repaid, of crimes that stained the soul so deeply that no amount of confession could provide absolution. They promised punishments that would extend beyond death itself, torments designed specifically for those who had betrayed the trust of the faithful and defiled the sacred spaces where the Emperor's light still shone. The shadowy confessor nodded in agreement with each accusation, his hidden face radiating approval for the justice that was slowly taking shape around me. The grinding started 3 levels down from my hideout, echoing through the ventilation system like massive gears turning against rusted metal. I'd been trying to sleep when the sound began, a rhythmic mechanical scraping that seemed to follow no pattern I could identify. The whispers had grown quiet for the first time in days, replaced by this new auditory torment that made my teeth ache with each grinding revolution. I pressed my ear against the corroded wall, trying to determine the source of the noise. The sound traveled through the hive's superstructure in ways that defied easy tracking, bouncing off support beams and resonating through empty chambers until it seemed to come from everywhere at once. But underneath the mechanical grinding, I could hear something else, footsteps that matched the rhythm, heavy and deliberate, as if something massive was walking through the Underhive's forgotten depths. The obscura withdrawal was making everything worse. My hands shook constantly now, and the familiar ache in my joints had spread through my entire body like liquid fire. I'd been rationing the remaining vials from Jorik's stash, trying to make them last until I could secure a new supply, but the need was becoming impossible to ignore. The purple liquid was the only thing that quieted the whispers and made the shadows behave properly, but each dose seemed less effective than the last. When I finally ventured out to check on my territory, the grinding followed me through the tunnel system. The sound seemed to originate from the ventilation shafts that ran parallel to the main passages, traveling through the network of ducts and maintenance corridors that connected different sections of the Underhive. Whatever was making the noise was large enough to fill the shafts completely, scraping against the metal walls as it moved with inexorable purpose. My runners had been avoiding their usual collection routes, claiming that something was hunting in the deeper tunnels. The few who still reported back brought stories of massive shapes glimpsed in the darkness, mechanical figures that moved with grinding, deliberate steps through areas that should have been empty. Most of the other gangers dismissed these reports as obscura-induced hallucinations or attempts to avoid dangerous assignments, but I recognized the fear in their voices. They'd seen something that violated their understanding of how the Underhive worked, something that didn't belong in the familiar ecosystem of human predators and prey. The mechanical footsteps grew closer throughout the morning, accompanied by the sound of metal scraping against stone. I could track the thing's progress through my mental map of the tunnel system, noting how it seemed to follow the same routes I used when moving between different parts of my territory. The pattern suggested intelligence rather than random wandering, as if whatever was down there knew exactly where it was going and why. By midday, I could hear the grinding directly beneath my hideout, resonating through the foundation walls with enough force to make dust rain from the ceiling. The sound had acquired new qualities, hydraulic hisses and servo whines that spoke of ancient machinery still functioning despite decades of neglect. I'd heard similar noises before, in the deep industrial sectors, where the hive's original manufacturing equipment still operated under automated protocols that no living person understood. The need for Obscura finally overcame my caution about venturing into contested territory. I knew of a chem lab 3 levels down that produced low-grade stimulants and hallucinogens for the local market, run by a half-mad chemist who asked no questions as long as the payment was adequate. The route required passing through sections controlled by the Rust Prophets, but my reputation and the promise of shared profits had always guaranteed safe passage in the past. The tunnels felt different as I made my way deeper into the Underhive's bowels. The familiar landmarks were all in their proper places, but the proportions seemed subtly wrong, as if the walls had shifted inward by just a few centimeters. The air grew thicker and more oppressive with each level, carrying chemical traces that burned my lungs and made my eyes water. The grinding sound grew louder too, no longer confined to the ventilation system, but seeming to emerge from the walls themselves. I found the first body in a maintenance alcove that should have been empty. The corpse belonged to one of my runners, a scrawny kid named Vec who'd been working the deep tunnels for the past month. His body had been arranged in a specific pose, arms crossed over his chest and eyes closed as if he'd been prepared for burial. But the wounds that killed him told a different story, precise incisions that had opened his major arteries with surgical efficiency, allowing him to bleed out slowly while remaining conscious. The blood had been collected rather than allowed to pool naturally, leaving the corpse drained and pale in ways that suggested ritual purpose rather than simple murder. Purity seals had been placed over his eyes and mouth, genuine ecclesiastical items that bore the same blessed markings I'd seen in the old woman's shrine. The sight made my stomach clench with recognition and guilt, connecting this death to the crimes I'd been confessing and denying in equal measure. More bodies appeared as I continued deeper into the tunnel system, each one arranged with the same ritual precision and marked with the same blessed seals. I recognized most of them, small-time criminals and chem addicts who'd operated in the deep Underhive's forgotten corners, preying on the desperate and the weak. All of them had died from precise wounds that spoke of someone with extensive knowledge of human anatomy, someone who understood exactly how to cause maximum suffering while maintaining consciousness. The grinding sound had become constant now, no longer following any discernible rhythm, but maintaining a steady mechanical drone that seemed to vibrate through my bones. The footsteps that accompanied it were clearer too, heavy impacts that shook dust from the ceiling and made the corroded walls groan under stress. Whatever was making the noise was close enough that I should have been able to see it directly, but the tunnels ahead remained empty except for the carefully arranged corpses. The chem lab occupied a converted storage chamber that had been carved out of the foundation rock decades ago. The chemist who ran it was a twisted creature named Dolman, his body warped by years of exposure to the toxic compounds he brewed in his makeshift equipment. He'd lost most of his hair and several fingers to chemical burns, and his skin had acquired a grayish pallor that spoke of systemic poisoning. But his products were reliable and his prices fair, making him one of the few merchants in the deep Underhive who maintained a steady customer base. I found him dead in his laboratory, slumped over a bubbling vat of purple liquid that looked remarkably similar to the premium Obscura I'd stolen from Jorik. His body showed the same precise wounds as the others, surgical incisions that had been designed to cause maximum pain while preventing quick death. The purity seals over his eyes and mouth were still damp with blessed oils, suggesting that whoever had killed him was working their way through the deep tunnels in a systematic pattern. The Obscura in the vat was still warm, indicating that Dolman had been working when his killer arrived. I filled several vials with the purple substance, noting how it seemed thicker and more potent than the usual swill he produced for his regular customers. The chemical had an oily consistency that clung to the glass in ways that suggested additional compounds had been mixed into the standard formula. When I held one of the vials up to the light, I could see particulates suspended in the liquid that glittered like tiny stars. The first dose hit differently than any Obscura I'd used before. Instead of the familiar warm drowsiness, I felt a sharp clarity that made every detail of my surroundings stand out with painful precision. The shadows in the laboratory seemed deeper and more substantial, filled with movement that hurt to observe directly. The grinding sound that had been following me through the tunnels suddenly made sense. It wasn't coming from some external source, but from inside my own head, the sound of my guilty conscience grinding against itself like broken machinery. The whispers returned as the drug took full effect, but now they carried individual voices that I recognized with horrible clarity. The old woman from the shrine spoke first, her words carrying the weight of genuine faith betrayed by greed and violence. She recounted the years she'd spent maintaining her hidden sanctuary, the prayers she'd whispered for the souls of everyone who died in the Underhive's constant warfare. Her voice held no anger, only a profound sadness that made my chest ache with unfamiliar emotion. Jorik's voice joined the chorus, describing our shared childhood and the trust that had grown between us over decades of mutual survival. He spoke of specific moments when I'd watched his back against rival gangers, times when our partnership had kept both of us alive against overwhelming odds. The betrayal of that trust carried more weight than simple murder, representing the destruction of something rare and valuable in a place where loyalty was usually measured in hours rather than years. The other voices belonged to people I'd killed or betrayed over the years, a catalog of crimes that stretched back to my earliest days as an Underhive scavenger. Each speaker recounted their death in clinical detail, describing not just the physical act of violence, but the emotional impact of betrayal and the fear they'd felt in their final moments. The words came from the ventilation system around me, echoing off the laboratory walls in ways that made it impossible to determine their exact source. But even as the voices accused me with perfect accuracy, I found myself denying everything with equal conviction. The lies poured out of my mouth without conscious volition, elaborate fabrications that contradicted the evidence of my own memories. I could describe murdering the old woman while simultaneously insisting that she died of natural causes, that I'd simply found her body and claimed her possessions as salvage. The contradiction didn't seem to matter. Truth and falsehood existed simultaneously in my mind without creating any sense of cognitive dissonance. The grinding sound grew louder as I left the laboratory, now clearly coming from the tunnel ahead rather than the ventilation system. The footsteps that accompanied it were heavy enough to shake loose debris from the ceiling, suggesting something far larger than human proportions. I caught my first clear glimpse of the thing as I rounded a corner in the main passage. A towering figure in the flowing robes of an ecclesiarchy confessor, but standing nearly 3 meters tall and moving with the mechanical precision of ancient servitor technology. The confessor's face remained hidden in the depths of his hood, but his eyes burned with cold fire that illuminated the tunnel walls in shifting patterns of light and shadow. His robes were made from genuine ecclesiastical fabric, blessed materials that should have been impossible to obtain in the Underhive's black markets. But the body beneath the robes was clearly mechanical, servo motors and hydraulic systems that explained the grinding sounds I'd been hearing for hours. The thing moved with deliberate purpose through the tunnel system, following a route that seemed designed to intersect with my own path at specific intervals. Wasn't hunting in any conventional sense, but rather conducting some kind of systematic patrol through territories where I'd committed my worst crimes. The mechanical confessor paused at each location where I'd murdered someone, standing in silent vigil over spots that still carried the psychic residue of violence and betrayal. When it finally spoke, the voice came from everywhere at once. The ventilation system, the walls themselves, even the air around me seemed to carry the words with crushing authority. The language was high Gothic, but somehow I understood every syllable despite my limited education in ecclesiastical matters. The confessor spoke of judgment and atonement, of debts that could only be paid through suffering that matched the pain I'd inflicted on others. The mechanical figure began moving faster through the tunnels, its grinding footsteps taking on a more urgent rhythm that suggested active pursuit rather than passive patrol. I ran through passages that I'd navigated thousands of times before, but the familiar route seemed to stretch and distort under the influence of whatever force was driving the confessor's relentless advance. Corridors that should have led to safe exits instead curved back on themselves, trapping me in a maze of corroded metal and weeping stone. The deeper I fled into the Underhive's forgotten levels, the more evidence I found of the systematic hunt that was taking place around me. Bodies appeared in maintenance alcoves and abandoned chambers, each one arranged with the same ritual precision and marked with blessed seals that spoke of ecclesiastical authority. The victims were all people I recognized, criminals and addicts who'd operated in the same territories where I'd built my reputation through violence and betrayal. but the kills showed a pattern that went beyond simple revenge or justice. The wounds were too precise, too calculated to be the work of human hands, even those guided by religious fervor. The mechanical confessor was conducting some kind of purification ritual, systematically eliminating everyone who'd been contaminated by contact with my crimes. The blessed seals weren't just markers of death, but components in a larger working that was designed to cleanse the underhive of corruption through methodical violence. I found temporary refuge in an abandoned hab block that had been sealed off after a structural collapse decades ago. The entrance was partially blocked by debris, creating a narrow opening that would be difficult for the massive confessor to navigate. But even as I caught my breath in the relative safety of the ruined chambers, I could hear the grinding sound growing closer, accompanied by the systematic destruction of obstacles that stood in the thing's path. The obscura was wearing off faster than it should have, leaving me crashing back into full awareness of my situation with painful clarity. The whispers returned with renewed intensity, filling the abandoned hab block with accusations that seemed to emerge from the walls themselves. But now the voices belonged to people who were still alive, potential victims who would die because of their association with my criminal activities. The mechanical confessor wasn't just hunting me, it was systematically eliminating everyone who'd been touched by the corruption that surrounded my existence. The sound of grinding metal filled the hab block as the confessor began forcing its way through the debris that blocked the entrance. Chunks of rockcrete crashed to the floor as hydraulic systems applied irresistible pressure to the structural barriers, clearing a path with mechanical efficiency that brooked no obstacles. The thing's eyes cast shifting patterns of light across the ruined chambers, illuminating details that made the space feel more like a tomb than a refuge. The grinding stopped when the confessor finally broke through the debris blocking the hab block entrance. In the sudden silence, I could hear my own ragged breathing echoing off the corroded walls, each exhale betraying my position to the towering figure that now stood framed in the jagged opening. The thing's burning eyes swept across the ruined chambers with methodical thoroughness, searching for the source of corruption that had drawn it through kilometers of underhive tunnels. I pressed myself deeper into the shadows of a collapsed support beam, feeling the cold metal against my back as I tried to control the trembling that had seized my limbs. The obscura crash was hitting harder than usual, leaving my nervous system raw and hypersensitive to every sound and movement. But even through the chemical withdrawal, I recognized the truth that my mind had been fighting to deny for days. This wasn't some drug-induced hallucination or manifestation of guilt-driven paranoia. The mechanical confessor was real, and it had come for me specifically. Memory struck like a physical blow as I stared at the thing's imposing silhouette. 23 years ago, during one of my first major scores, I'd ambushed a pilgrimage convoy that had been traveling through the Underhive's outer reaches. The pilgrims had been carrying offerings to some forgotten shrine in the deep tunnels, their pockets heavy with thrown gelt and their packs filled with blessed artifacts that would fetch premium prices in the black markets. Most of them had died quickly when my crew hit their camp, but their confessor had fought back with the kind of righteous fury that only true believers could muster. I put 3 stub rounds into his chest before he finally went down, watching his blood soak into the tunnel floor while his lips moved in silent prayer. The bastard had taken nearly an hour to die, using his final breaths to whisper condemnations and promises of divine retribution that I dismissed as the desperate ravings of a dying fanatic. But as he bled out in that forgotten passage, his eyes had held the same cold fire that now burned in the mechanical thing's hidden face. The confessor began moving through the hab block with deliberate purpose, its massive frame navigating the debris-strewn chambers without disturbing the careful arrangement of wreckage. Each footstep sent vibrations through the floor that I could feel in my bones, a rhythmic pounding that matched the accelerated beating of my heart. The thing moved like it knew exactly where I was hiding, following a path that would inevitably lead to my concealment behind the collapsed beam. Panic finally overcame paralysis, driving me from my hiding spot toward the rear of the hab block where a partially collapsed wall offered potential escape into the adjacent tunnel system. I scrambled over piles of rubble and twisted metal, my hands leaving bloody smears on the sharp edges as I fought to reach the opening before the confessor could intercept me. Behind me, I could hear the thing's measured advance continuing at the same unhurried pace, as if it knew that flight was ultimately futile. The opening in the rear wall led to a maintenance corridor that I'd used before during territorial disputes with rival gangers. The passage was narrow enough that the confessor's bulk would have difficulty following, but as I squeezed through the gap, I could hear the sound of metal being torn apart as the thing simply created its own entrance through the hab block's weakened structure. The mechanical strength required to rip through reinforced rockcrete spoke of power sources that went far beyond anything the Underhive scavengers could cobble together from salvaged components. I ran through tunnels that had once been as familiar as my own reflection, but now seemed twisted and alien under the influence of whatever force was driving the Confessor's relentless pursuit. Passages that should have led to safe territory instead curved back on themselves or terminated in dead ends that hadn't existed before. The very geometry of the Underhive seemed to be shifting around me, reshaping itself to prevent escape while funneling me towards some predetermined destination. The whispers grew stronger as I fled deeper into the tunnel system, no longer confined to the ventilation shafts, but seeming to emerge from the walls themselves. They spoke with the voices of everyone I'd ever wronged, creating a chorus of accusation that followed me through each twist and turn of the labyrinthine passages. The old woman's voice rose above the others, describing the years she'd spent maintaining her hidden shrine while I'd been planning the robbery that would lead to her murder. But even as the voices recounted my crimes with perfect accuracy, I found myself denying everything with equal conviction. The lies poured out of my mouth without conscious control, elaborate fabrications that contradicted the evidence of my own memories, while simultaneously confessing to acts of violence that I'd never actually committed. The contradiction felt natural rather than disturbing, as if truth and falsehood were simply different aspects of the same fundamental reality. The tunnel system began showing signs of deliberate modification as I penetrated deeper into the Underhive's forgotten levels. Walls that had been roughly hewn from living rock now bore carved reliefs depicting scenes of imperial justice and divine retribution. The ceiling had been painted with crude but recognizable ecclesiastical symbols, aquilas and skulls that seemed to watch my passage with accusing eyes. Candles lined the passages at regular intervals, their flames casting dancing shadows that moved independently of their light sources. I recognized the modifications with growing horror. Someone had been transforming this section of the Underhive into a massive shrine, carving devotional imagery into every available surface while maintaining the basic structure of the tunnel network. The work showed signs of having taken years to complete, suggesting a level of dedication and planning that spoke of divine inspiration rather than simple human obsession. The mechanical confessor hadn't simply appeared to hunt me. It had been preparing this space as a temple of judgment where my final reckoning would take place. The main chamber opened before me like the mouth of some vast predator, its walls rising into darkness that my failing glow strip couldn't penetrate. The space had been carved from the living rock of the Hive's foundations, creating a cathedral-like vault that dwarfed anything I'd seen in the Underhive's cramped confines. Massive pillars supported the vaulted ceiling, each one carved with spiraling reliefs that depicted the Emperor's various aspects as judge, warrior, and divine sovereign. Candles burned in wall-mounted sconces throughout the chamber, their combined light creating a warm glow that made the carved figures seem to move with subtle life. At the far end of the chamber, a raised dais held an altar that had been constructed from genuine imperial materials, rather than the scavenged debris that usually passed for religious furniture in the Underhive. The altar cloth bore authentic ecclesiastical markings, and the ceremonial implements arranged on its surface showed the kind of craftsmanship that required access to upper Hive workshops. Behind the altar, a massive aquila had been carved directly into the rock face, its wings spread wide in a gesture of divine protection that seemed to encompass the entire chamber. The mechanical confessor entered the chamber as I stood frozen by the overwhelming scope of what I was seeing. The thing moved with renewed purpose now that it had reached its intended destination, striding across the carved floor toward the altar with footsteps that rang like hammer blows against an anvil. Its burning eyes cast shifting patterns of light across the chamber walls, illuminating details that spoke of years of careful preparation and religious devotion. I tried to run toward the chamber's entrance, but found my legs refusing to obey conscious commands. Some force beyond physical restraint held me in place, rooting my feet to the carved floor while the confessor approached with inexorable certainty. The whispers that had been following me through the tunnels now filled the entire chamber, creating a wall of sound that seemed to press against my eardrums with crushing weight. Every voice belonged to someone I'd wronged, but now they spoke in perfect unison rather than the chaotic babble I'd grown accustomed to hearing. The confessor reached the altar and turned to face me, its hidden features finally becoming visible in the candlelight that filled the chamber. The face beneath the hood was human but ancient, preserved through methods that spoke of divine intervention rather than technological augmentation. The skin had the waxy pallor of death, but the eyes burned with intelligence and purpose that transcended mortal limitations. I recognized the features with a shock of memory that felt like ice water in my veins. This was the same confessor I'd murdered during the pilgrimage convoy ambush, returned from death to claim the justice that had been denied him in life. The dead confessor raised one hand, and suddenly I could feel the presence of every person I'd ever killed or betrayed. They stood around me in the chamber, translucent figures that flickered like candle flames, but possessed weight and substance that pressed against my consciousness. The old woman from the shrine stood directly before me, her face bearing the same expression of profound sadness I'd seen in her final moments. Jorik appeared at my left shoulder, the wound in his throat still weeping blood that never quite reached the floor. One by one, each spirit began to speak, recounting not just the circumstances of their death, but the full impact of my crimes on their lives and the lives of those who'd cared for them. The old woman described the pilgrims who depended on her shrine for spiritual guidance, left without comfort when her murder ended decades of faithful service. Jorik spoke of plans he'd made for the future, dreams of escaping the Underhive that had died with him in my hideout. Each testimony added weight to the crushing burden of guilt that was settling over my shoulders like a lead shroud. But even as the spirits accused me with perfect accuracy, I continued to deny everything with pathological persistence. The lies came faster now, elaborate fabrications that grew more complex and contradictory with each passing moment. I could confess to murdering the old woman while simultaneously insisting that I'd never seen her before, describe Jorik's death in vivid detail while claiming he was still alive and hiding somewhere in the deep tunnels. The contradictions felt natural rather than disturbing, as if my mind had fractured along lines that allowed truth and falsehood to exist simultaneously without conflict. The dead confessor began to speak, his voice carrying the weight of absolute authority backed by divine will. He recited a catalog of my crimes that stretched back to my earliest days as an Underhive scavenger, describing acts of violence and betrayal that I'd forgotten or deliberately suppressed. But his words carried more than simple accusation. They held the power of judgment itself, pronouncing sentences that would be carried out through methods that transcended mortal understanding. The chamber began to change around me as the confessor's pronouncement continued, walls shifting and flowing like liquid stone while maintaining their basic structure. The carved reliefs depicting scenes of imperial justice began to move, showing the fates that awaited those who defied the Emperor's will through acts of murder and betrayal. The figures in the carvings turned their stone eyes toward me, their expressions holding the same cold judgment that burned in the confessor's resurrected features. I felt my body beginning to change as well, flesh becoming rigid and unresponsive while remaining fully capable of sensation. The transformation wasn't painful in any conventional sense, but carried a weight of finality that was more terrifying than physical agony. I was becoming part of the chamber itself, my consciousness trapped within stone that would endure for millennia while my crimes were recounted in endless repetition. The spirits of my victims began to fade as the transformation progressed, but their voices remained embedded in the chamber's acoustics like echoes that would never diminish. They would speak my crimes aloud for eternity, creating a permanent record of every act of violence and betrayal that had brought me to this moment of divine justice. But even as they accused me with perfect accuracy, my own voice would answer with lies and denials, creating a perpetual dialogue between truth and falsehood that would continue until the hive itself crumbled into dust. The dead confessor placed his hands on my shoulders as the final stage of the transformation began, his touch carrying the cold weight of absolute judgment. His eyes held no hatred or anger, only the implacable certainty of divine will being carried out through methods that mortal minds couldn't fully comprehend. The Emperor's justice had found me at last, not through the crude instruments of arbitrator Shock Malls or gang warfare, but through the return of someone whose death I dismissed as inconsequential decades ago. My consciousness settled into the stone of the chamber walls as my body completed its transformation into part of the shrine's permanent structure. I could feel every surface of the carved space, every candle flame and carved relief that decorated the massive vault. The whispers of my victims filled the chamber with constant accusation, while my own voice answered with lies and denials that grew more elaborate and contradictory with each repetition. The cycle would continue forever, a permanent testament to the crimes that had brought divine retribution down upon my head. The dead confessor took his place at the altar, resuming the vigil that my murder had interrupted 23 years ago. His prayers filled the chamber with words of devotion and supplication, creating a counterpoint to the endless dialogue of accusation and denial that now formed the shrine's primary purpose. The candles burned with flames that would never be extinguished, fed by forces that transcended mortal understanding of physics and chemistry. In the depths of my stone prison, I finally understood the true scope of the Emperor's justice. It wasn't simply punishment for crimes committed, but a perfect balance that matched the suffering I'd inflicted on others with torments specifically designed for my particular sins. The lies I'd told throughout my life would continue forever, growing more complex and contradictory, while simultaneously being answered by the perfect truth of my victims' testimonies. The contradiction that had always defined my existence would become eternal, a permanent feature of reality that would endure long after the hive above crumbled into forgotten ruin. The chamber settled into its final configuration as my transformation completed, creating a shrine that would serve as both monument and warning for any who might stumble across it in the deep tunnels. The carved reliefs would continue to move, showing scenes of judgment and retribution that reflected the eternal struggle between truth and falsehood playing out in the chamber's acoustics. The dead confessor would maintain his vigil, ensuring that the Emperor's justice continued to manifest through methods that transcended mortal understanding. My voice joined the eternal chorus that now filled the chamber, confessing crimes while simultaneously denying them, creating a perpetual cycle of truth and falsehood that would continue until the stars themselves burned out. The whispers of my victims provided perfect counterpoint, recounting each act of violence and betrayal with accuracy that could never be challenged or dismissed. Together, we formed a permanent record of corruption and judgment, a testament to the price that must be paid by those who choose to defy the Emperor's will through acts of murder and betrayal. The Emperor's justice had found me at last, not through the crude instruments of mortal law enforcement, but through the return of someone whose death I'd dismissed as inconsequential. In this forgotten shrine buried deep in the Underhive's bowels, I would spend eternity confessing my sins to walls that echoed my lies back with perfect accuracy, trapped forever in a cycle of accusation and denial that reflected the fundamental contradiction that had always defined my existence as a pathological liar and murderer in the darkness beneath Vervenhive.